I dealt with a multitude of Rush Limbaughs when I was walking through the hallways of my high school.
Richard Grenell is basically an internet troll.
It's a ridiculously insane choice.
Edmonia Lewis became part of what writer Henry James dubbed that strange sisterhood of American lady sculptors.
As one federal judge has come in and tried to force upon this state something which she cannot do.
For someone with privilege, it makes absolutely no sense to deny anyone else those privileges that you're afforded.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Indonesia considers forced rehab for deviants, gay ambassador tapped for Trump's dirty work, and Alabama's past perceived in the present. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Carol Myers.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 22, 2020. The lives of LGBTQ people in Indonesia have gotten worse. The leaked draft of a new family resilience law would require anyone suffering from sexual deviations to turn themselves into a government rehab facility for treatment. The draconian bill outlaws urges to achieve sexual satisfaction through unusual and unreasonable ways. Among the penalties for noncompliance, anyone who fails to report to a rehab center can have their children taken away from them either temporarily or permanently. The same goes for family members who fail to report their queer relatives. The proposed legislation defines the roles of a father and mother within the home in specific terms. For example, married women would be required to take care of household-related matters, and treat the husband and child well. The draft law also punishes people engaged in surrogacy with up to 7 years in prison. The case of Reynard Sinaga has added fuel to an already anti-queer atmosphere. As we've previously reported, Sinaga is an Indonesian studying in the UK who's been dubbed Britain's most prolific rapist. He's been convicted of drugging and victimizing more than 100 men in the Manchester area. Sensationalized coverage in his homeland focused more on Sinaga's homosexuality than on his horrific crimes.
Same-gender sex is technically not illegal in the world's most populous Muslim-majority nation, except in Aceh, the semi-autonomous Indonesian province governed under strict Islamic law. Still, a number of high-profile government and religious leaders have stoked the flames of homophobia with vitriolic rhetoric. Some have even called for virtual genocide to rid the country of LGBTQ people entirely. Human rights groups and queer advocacy organizations have been quick to condemn the bill. It set social media afire, mostly with negative comments. Amnesty International calls it a very patriarchal bill that will set back progress in gender equality and women's rights protection. The bill reportedly has the backing of all four Indonesian political parties. Sodik Mujahid is one lawmaker who defends the bill. He told Compass.com that homosexuality disrupts the future of mankind. However, passage of the bill requires the backing of President Joko Widodo, and he has yet to comment on it.
Students in Vietnam are being taught that same-gender attraction is a disease or mental illness that can be cured. This according to a report issued on Valentine's Day by Human Rights Watch. It seems to contradict what appeared to have been the Southeast Asian country's slow progress on queer rights. Starting in 2015, the government allowed transgender people who have undergone gender reassignment surgery to register as their correct gender, and Vietnam voted in favor of establishing an LGBTQ rights watchdog at the United Nations in 2016. But homosexual orientation remains taboo in much of Vietnamese society, and Human Rights Watch found plenty of testimony from school administrators, teachers, and students to back that up. Young people said that they frequently heard both teachers and family members call same-gender attraction a mental illness or disease. LGBTQ point person for the rights group Graham Reed told The Guardian that an increasingly vibrant and visible queer rights movement in Vietnam has led to more awareness and social acceptance of sexual orientation and gender identity in recent years. But Reed said, The government's actions have so far not officially reflected these changes. No Li Phong Lin of the Vietnamese human rights advocacy group ICS Center said that, "We need stronger steps from the government to tackle discrimination and create a safe and inclusive education environment for our youth."
A transgender woman made history at the United Nations. Ayesha Mughal of Pakistan's Ministry of Human Rights became the first trans person to be part of a national delegation to the Global Bodies meeting on violence against women. However, Mughal was not the first trans person to participate in discussions at the UN Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. There have been a few from non-governmental organizations, but Mughal was the first one to be part of a government delegation. She tweeted her appreciation and wrote that she wanted to acknowledge the efforts of my government for mainstreaming the transgender community of Pakistan. This latest advance in Pakistan comes on the heels of a major bill to offer transgender people free health care and to establish separate hospital wards to ensure that they get the best non-judgmental care. Prime Minister Imran Khan has said that his government is taking responsibility in response to a number of reports of harassment and outright denials of treatment for transgender people by hospital staff and even by other patients. Mughal said, "With all the support from the government, I feel proud to be a Pakistani transgender woman."
In the Mormon Church, however, gender is God-given and eternal. The newest edition of the General Handbook, Serving in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, expands on earlier pronouncements, replacing two earlier versions. Those are only available in print and only to faith leaders. The latest edition was posted online this week for all to see. The handbook describes gender as an essential characteristic of Heavenly Father's plan of happiness, and the intended meaning of gender is biological sex at birth. The lengthy section on transgender individuals counsels Mormons against elective medical or surgical intervention for the purpose of attempting to transition to the opposite gender of a person's birth sex. Any Mormon who adopts changes in dress, grooming, names, or pronouns intended to reflect a gender identity different from the one assigned at birth faces some serious church restrictions. Trans men will not be allowed to participate in the all-male ordained Mormon priesthood. Official church assignments or callings are limited, and trans people cannot gain full access to Mormon temples. Affirmation is a global organization of queer and queer-supportive Mormons. The group said in a press statement that, "Narrowly defining gender as the biological sex at birth negates the lived experiences of transgender individuals." According to the Salt Lake Tribune, the new handbook is now only available in English, but it will be translated into 51 languages.
Among the queer U.S. political stories this week, trailblazing married gay presidential contender Pete Buttigieg really does have a Nigerian prince, of sorts. A Nigerian man named Shinedu confessed to BuzzFeed News this week that he really is a fan of the former South Bend, Indiana mayor, and that he really is behind the mysterious Twitter account supporting him. Conspiracy theorists have been charging that the account is run by a Buttigieg campaign-controlled operative in the African nation. Both Mother Jones and Newsweek have also confirmed the man's identity, although he used only his first name because he's been hounded as a fraud or worse on social media. Shinedu said, "I just support Pete passionately. Many others outside the U.S. support Pete as well." All the abuse has led the Pete promoter to delete his Easy Shinedu account. Meanwhile, Chastin Buttigieg responded to right-wing talk show flamethrower Rush Limbaugh's attacks on his husband during an ABC TV interview this week. It was itself something of a historic moment, since it was part of the network's series of interviews with the spouses of the leading presidential contenders. And, of course, the Buttigieges are the first same-gender couple. As for the radio show Loudmouth's rant...
"Well, look, this isn't new. I dealt with a multitude of Rush Limbaughs when I was walking through the hallways of my high school. And you have to realize that LGBTQ Americans have to come out every single day. When somebody asks who we're married to, asks about our partner, or you feel like you want to share something about yourself, but then you have to second guess how that person's going to react if I say, well, my husband, instead of my wife. I've been dealing with the likes of Rush Limbaugh my entire life. What I'm actually worried about are the young people in this country who are watching the historic nature of this campaign, watching how people talk about it, watching how people react to it and treat it, and wondering if this country is actually a safe place for them to be."
That's Mayor Pete's hubby, Chastin Buttigieg.
Finally, let's catch up on the top quips by Democratic presidential contenders on the U.S. campaign trail. Elizabeth Warren's strong showing at the umpteenth and most watched so far televised candidates debate this week netted a reported $5 million in overnight campaign contributions. At a campaign stop in New Hampshire, Warren offered one of the best ever dismissals of a Republican official. Asked if she whispered into her dog Bailey's ear about a running mate, "Who is going to be my Mike Pence? Who will look at me with adoring eyes?" Warren didn't miss a beat.
"I already have a dog."
That's NewsWrap, Global Queer News with Attitude for the week ending February 22nd, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to NewsWrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Carol Myers.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
Acclaimed American sculptor Edmonia Lewis, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
But first,
I'll be loyal to you, 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 you.
President Donald Trump has appointed U.S. Ambassador to Germany Richard Grenell to serve as his latest acting director of national intelligence, making him the first openly gay member of a presidential cabinet. However, the asterisk beside Grenell's name in the queer history books will probably be larger than his somewhat dubious latest achievement. His temporary hiring by presidential tweet came immediately after the firing of his predecessor, who apparently angered Trump by lawfully warning Congress about the threat posed by Russian interference in the upcoming elections. MSNBC's Joe Scarborough asked Tufts University professor Daniel Dresner the question atop everyone's mind.
How dangerous is this selection by Donald Trump?
About as dangerous as asking me to fly a plane, given that I have absolutely no pilot experience whatsoever. It's a ridiculously insane choice. The man has no qualifications to run the intelligence community. Given his background, he has no management experience either, and he's suddenly being asked to oversee 17 different intelligence agencies. This guy has two qualifications. One, he's good on getting on Fox News and on Twitter. And second, he's apparently a gold member in the Trump Hotel Club. Beyond that, there's no qualifications we can talk about. He's supposed to be simultaneously the acting ODNI and the U.S. ambassador to Germany and the special representative to Serbia and Kosovo. And he'll successfully fail at all three jobs.
In addition to his already bulging portfolio, Grenell had taken it upon himself to work for the decriminalization of homosexuality around the world. His efforts were not backed by the State Department and have been widely judged a failure. That could be because of his lack of connection with global LGBTQ activists, or possibly because of his associations with the European far right, or the undiplomatic reputation he earned during his time at the UN. Gay Democratic Congressman David Cicilline of Rhode Island expressed his concerns about Grenell's track record to MSNBC's Joy Reid.
There are tremendous risks. I mean, this is an important position. We rely on the Director of National Intelligence to provide information to the Congress and to the President about the security threats to our country and have the chief responsibility of sharing that information with Congress in a bipartisan way. Richard Grenell is basically an internet troll. He is a loyalist to the President. He is not qualified to hold this position even for a single day. And now we're learning that Mr. McGuire was removed from the position, likely in part in response to the briefing he provided to the Intelligence Committee, and the President is installed on a temporary basis someone that's loyal to him. We need someone in that position that's loyal to our country and that's loyal to the responsibilities of the Director of National Intelligence, not someone who's going to be a sycophant to the President and be afraid to tell him what the intelligence has actually found, whether the President likes to hear it or not. So I think it's very, very alarming that Richard Grenell will be in this position, even in an acting position, for a short period of time.
Connecticut Democratic Congressman Jim Himes gave MSNBC's Rachel Maddow a more calming view of Grenell's role.
If there's a silver lining here, Rachel, it is that the director of national intelligence sits atop the intelligence community, but the real action happens within CIA, happens within NSA, and inside those organizations, you have literally thousands of people who could be doing other things, making a lot more money than doing what they do, who are really at the controls. And so when you have an Ambassador Grinnell, or who has zero intelligence community experience, and his main qualification is his dogged loyalty to the president, there's not a lot that individual can do that without the assistance of some very patriotic people who live in the hierarchy below somebody like that.
Congressman Himes' point is well taken. Depending on how many of those career intelligence people Grinnell will leave in place. Thus far, he has eliminated the second in command in his new office and replaced him with a Republican political operative who has sided with the White House against the intelligence community. Grinnell has also requisitioned the materials behind the report on Russian election interference that so infuriated Trump.
We're not really able to enjoy the fact that we're married because there's so many people who would like to be wed, and that opportunity is no longer there.
One state's recent history as a cautionary tale. But first,
acclaimed American sculptor Edmonia Lewis, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Edmonia Lewis was born in the 1840s. Her father was African American and her mother was Chippewa Indian. Since they both died when Edmonia was very young, she was raised by her mother's tribe. They named her Wildfire. With financial help from her brother, Edmonia received art training at Oberlin College and apprenticed with sculptor Edward Brackett in Boston. While there, she befriended lesbian sculptors Anne Whitney and Harriet Hosmer and became part of what writer Henry James dubbed that strange sisterhood of American lady sculptors. Edmonia's masterpieces often reflected her Native American and African ancestry. And while many were lost to history, her two-ton marble statue titled The Death of Cleopatra was nearly lost forever. It was first exhibited at the Philadelphia Centennial Exposition in 1876. Lewis put it into storage, and then it disappeared. Before long, it turned up on display in a Chicago saloon and ended up at a racetrack as a grave marker for a racehorse named Cleopatra. After the racetrack shut down, the statue languished in an Illinois storage yard. By then battered, it was claimed by the Historical Society of Forest Park, and with the help of Lewis's biographer, was turned over to the Smithsonian Institute. Restored to its former glory in 1995, The Death of Cleopatra was displayed for all to see at the Smithsonian American Art Museum in Washington, D.C. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Anna Edwards.
I'm Roman Kalinin from Moscow. You are listening to This Way Out,
the showpiece of the homosexual movement in the United States.
Оставайтесь на нашей волне.
Stay on our wavelength.
Remembering how votes were won is an important tool for fighting to retain them. Voting rights in the U.S. are still under attack today, 5 years after the 50th anniversary commemoration of Montgomery, Alabama's Bloody Sunday March that was pivotal in securing those rights. And the marriage equality enjoyed by gay and lesbian couples today could face similar jeopardy, just as it was facing in Alabama at the time of that very commemoration. Days before, the state had revolted against federal marriage equality law. This Way Out's Greg Gordon reported in March of 2015.
At the request of two conservative organizations, the Alabama Supreme Court defied federal law on March 3rd by ordering state probate judges to stop issuing marriage licenses to lesbian and gay couples. The court's most outrageously anti-equality Chief Justice Roy Moore recused himself, but his views probably cast a long shadow over his fellow justices. Early the following day, the Human Rights Campaign was unable to find even one of the state's 67 counties that was issuing marriage licenses to gay and lesbian couples. Jay Stuberg of Newsy.com has more.
The 148-page ruling reads, in part, Alabama law allows for marriage between only one man and one woman. Alabama probate judges have a ministerial duty not to issue any marriage license contrary to this law. The ruling follows weeks of clashes between judges concerning same-sex marriage in the state. In January, a federal judge struck down Alabama's gay marriage ban, but some probate judges refused to abide by it. Then, in February, the same federal judge reiterated her stance and ordered dissenting judges to comply with her ruling. Alabama Supreme Court Justice Roy Moore, an outspoken opponent of same-sex marriage, then told probate judges they didn't have to honor the federal order.
As one federal judge has come in and tried to force upon this state something which she cannot do. Her opinion is not law.
In 2006, more than 80% of Alabama voters approved a measure that banned same-sex marriage. But according to a WAFF poll, those views have shifted in recent years, with those residents surveyed nearly split on the issue. For Newsy, I'm Jay Struberg.
Several legal advocacy organizations went back to federal court in Alabama on March 6th. They're asking the same district judge, who's already ruled twice that the state's ban on civil marriage for same-gender couples violates the U.S. Constitution, to make third time the charm. The National Center for Lesbian Rights, the ACLU of Alabama, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and Americans United for Separation of Church and State are asking U.S. District Judge Collie Granati to certify a still pending federal case against Alabama's ban in Mobile County as a class action lawsuit. A ruling for equality would definitively require all state probate judges in Alabama to issue marriage licenses to same-gender couples.
Brother to brother, brother to brother, brother to brother, brother to brother.
This is Essex Hemphill reminding you that you've tuned into This Way Out.
Homophobia, turn me around, keep on walking, keep on talking.
Think nothing's changed in the past 50 years? Ask somebody who lived through the Selma or Chicago or Los Angeles of the 1950s. Ask the female CEO who once might have been assigned to the secretarial pool if nothing's changed. Ask your gay friend if it's easier to be out and proud in America now than it was 30 years ago. To deny this progress, this hard-won progress, our progress, would be to rob us of our own agency, our own capacity, our responsibility to do what we can to make America better.
Civil rights activists who were beaten on Selma, Alabama's Edmund Pettus Bridge in 1965 did not imagine that 50 years later, the first African-American U.S. president would commemorate their march for voting rights, or that a half century would bring Alabama to another bridge to equality. At the historic movement meeting place, Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman found an African-American lesbian couple who were one of the first in the state to marry.
My name is Tori Wolf-Sisson, and we're outside of Brown Chapel in Selma, Alabama.
And I'm Shantae Wolf-Sisson, and we're here for Selma weekend.
Shantae and Tori, we're here on the 50th anniversary of the observance of Bloody Sunday. People are talking about voting rights, the right to be heard. This also happens to come a few days after the Alabama Supreme Court has put a halt to marriage equality in Alabama. You were the first couple to get married in Montgomery, the first same-sex couple. Your response to this and how it relates to this weekend?
It's really hard to tie it together. They're kind of parallel, but not really perpendicular issues. And considering the fact that now no other couples can be married, this makes it bittersweet. We're not really able to enjoy the fact that we're married because, one, all of our rights were just stripped, and two, there's so many people who would like to be wed, and that opportunity is no longer there.
Can you talk about marriage equality as an issue of civil rights, which is so much the buzzword this weekend?
Yeah. It's interesting because a lot of the people that want to strip our rights don't really understand what they are. When people talk about marriage equality, same-sex marriages, they think about the sexual nature of it, but they don't really understand what those rights are and what rights we don't have and what rights we're fighting for. So in the state of Alabama, there's no accommodations, protections. There's no people can be fired for being same-gender loving individuals. I'm missing something, I'm sure, but there's so many things that we don't have. And so marriage equality, that means that if one of us goes to the hospital, I would be able to check on her without any issue. If we wanted to adopt, there's laws on the books that you have to be married to have second parent adoptions, and that's part of like the original deal. So it's there's a lot of protections that were not afforded, and people don't understand that when they're trying to deny them.
And looking at it from a civil rights aspect, if you're about liberation, you have to be about liberation for all people. That's the closest that everyone should be able to tie the two together, because often, more so than not these days, people are trying to romanticize, you know, oh, marriage equality is the new civil rights. It is a civil rights issue, but you shouldn't, like, try to replace something that has already happened in history.
Is there any message you'd like to leave with the Alabama State Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore, who told judges not to issue same-sex marriages when it was legal and now, well, has put a halt to same-sex marriage in Alabama?
Let's be clear. For someone with privilege, it makes absolutely no sense to deny anyone else those privileges that you're afforded.
Will you be walking over the bridge today?
Yes.
One of the state's first same-gender marrieds, Tori and Shantae Wolf Sisson, spoke with Amy Goodman before joining thousands to march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge on March 7th in Selma, Alabama.
Civil rights are still a dicey subject in Alabama. Ousted homophobic state Chief Justice Roy Moore is recycling his back-to-morality theme to get the Republican nomination for a Senate rematch against Democrat Doug Jones. Moore is running far behind the leading GOP candidate, former longtime Senator Jeff Sessions, who fought tooth and nail against LGBTQ rights before being ousted as Trump's first attorney general.
I'm John Dyer V. Does the truth really lie in our stars? Does being queer affect our astro selves?
I grew up on Long Island, but then my parents moved to North Carolina in 2005. And there was a lot of not only astrology is considered devil's work, but you're also the devil because you're gay. So I was a gay witch. I should have been burned at the stake, honestly.
Please join us for a fascinating and lively conversation with Colin Bedell, author of Queer Cosmos, The Astrology of Queer Identities and Relationships. And you yourself are a Gemini.
Correct. Yeah. So now, and everybody like shuts off the radio. No.
That's next time on This Way Out. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Carol Myers and Wenzel Jones, produced by Brian DeShazer, from Anna Edwards, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and from Jay Stubberg and Amy Goodman. Sarati, The Grateful Dead, and the Morehouse College Glee Club performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, David Hunt, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Together with all of our listener donors, they make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WRPI Troy, New York, 5GTR Mount Gambier, South Australia, KCEI Taos, New Mexico, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Now, y'all, stay tuned.